Well, good morning. It's October 3rd, 2012, and we have ample cloud cover as we begin this day and as we head towards the Baltimore-Washington World Series that each of us is hoping for. How very exciting. So we'll all be rooting and we'll all be hoping. It's really exciting to see the Orioles in the playoffs for the first time in a long time and to see the Nationals going there as well. I have one little announcement, and it's this. Fresh off the press from WHAG in Hagerstown, whose wire must be more connected than other wires. Maryland has been named one of the top 10 most energy efficient states in the country, according to the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. How about that, Bill Ariano? And among the incentive programs, Be Smart and the Maryland Energy Assistance Program. These programs helped about 4,000 Washington County homes save 25% or more on their utilities each year, and those programs have been done all across the country. And the Be Smart, is that the one that emerged, Bill, out of the weatherization?
It was a completely separate program.
Separate from the weatherization, but one for which there was a competitive grant that we competed for, and we won what, from the federal government?
From the federal government, $20 million.
$20 million from the federal government. Good job. All right. So anyway, just thought I'd share that good news with you. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, anything as we begin?
I just recall that big article in the Post the other day about how the Washington Nationals have brought together the Republicans and Democrats in Washington. Delighted the Orioles have brought O'Malley and Franchot together, too. I'm pleased that, you know, when I actually first mentioned this back in April about a World Series, and I was kind of chalked up to there's just another politician, but and then back then it was just a fantasy, really, but it's come to pass, and now they're both in the playoffs, and possibility of a World Series governor is very much alive. I happen to think that every baseball fan in the region is grateful for the historic season that we've witnessed. Think about it. The last time Washington was in the postseason was 1933. They didn't even have Major League Baseball in Baltimore then. So, long time ago. Last time the O's were in the World Series, were in the playoffs, was 1997. And there was no baseball team in Washington. So a lot has happened to really electrify the region and bring together long-suffering fans in both cities. I just want to salute the leadership of those two teams. I dare say that even Peter Angelos is getting some praise these days. I told him that he would be the last person ever to get any credit for this, and he didn't laugh at my attempted humor. Both teams have tremendous leadership. Davey Johnson is the manager of the Nationals, and he now has taken four teams to division leadership, fourth team to the playoffs. He's shown rock-steady leadership. Davey Johnson is definitely going to go to the Hall of Fame, or should go to the Hall of Fame. Buck Showalter is in the process of reviving his third franchise. He's used seemingly every player in the Orioles system. Obviously, every new name you see, you don't recognize, but it's been fascinating to watch his leadership. Both of them have general managers who have focused strategy, who have made the right moves in every part of the season. And everyone in the front office has been working in sync. And obviously, that's what separates the Nats and the Orioles from other rudderless teams. If you're a baseball fan, just look at the Houston Astros, who muddled through another 100-plus loss season, have tremendous players but bad leadership, and they're an absolute shipwreck. So 2 weeks from now, at the next Board of Public Works meeting, I hope both teams have moved further into the playoffs or one step closer to the Beltway Series. And if that comes to pass, I'm sure that the governor and treasurer and I will be the first in line to buy our tickets and watch these wonderful teams as they perform. And I will say, and we'll put some information out at the end of the week on this, there is a slight uptick in the economy when these teams are doing well, because people feel better. My stepmother out in Cleveland is a Cleveland Indians and Cleveland Browns fan. She's been morose the last month. So these teams have a big impact on the region, and I think we need to just take a moment, and I'm glad the governor brought it up, to appreciate and acknowledge their success. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller.
Okay, Madam Treasurer.
Good morning, Governor. We have a few presentations that I thought you wanted to.
I will say one. 88 years ago, what happened?
Coming out.
I'm going to look it up. 88 years ago, what happened when
1924.
Well, when the Washingtons were in the playoffs?
When the last century.
Walter Johnson.
I was going to say Walter Johnson.
I think I knew that, did you? The big train.
Yes. Yeah, we did. He was our hero. Okay, but we do have a few presentations from two different departments. The first one is apparently going to be the response to the questions that were raised at last board meeting about the tolls and the collections of the electronic tolling. I'll turn it over to Deputy Secretary, Acting Secretary Darrell Mobley.
Thank you. Absolutely. I'd like to have Carol Bartley, the Executive Secretary, come up. Mr. Bartley is going to provide the presentation to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Let me start by a little bit of background. In the tolling industry, electronic tolling and all electronic tolling is really becoming the way that the industry is going. And for Maryland, that means either Easy Pass or video tolling. Let me explain just quickly what video tolling is. If you go through an Easy Pass lane without an Easy Pass, a picture of your license plate is taken, and you are sent a notice of toll due for the toll that you incurred, plus a 50% premium on top of that toll because you have video toll. This has, in fact, become an acceptable method of payment for the MDTA. In fact, it has become the basis for roads like the Intercounty Connector, where we have no toll booths, and we count on both Easy Pass and video tolling as a method to pay your toll. And in fact, the new ETL lanes that we'll be constructing north of Baltimore will also count on all electronic tolling. And we also video toll on our legacy facilities as well. We are actually looking at some of our legacy facilities and with the thought of converting them to all electronic tolling. But my focus today is to talk about how video tolling impacts our revenue collection process and focus on the revenue side of that equation. But I think it's important to note that there are operating budget cost savings associated with video tolling, as well as the fact that it's a tremendous impact on our throughput for the system. So even the people who pay cash currently do benefit, in fact, from the folks who are electronic tolling because of the throughput that we have. Next slide, please. I want to start by saying there's no amount of unpaid tolls that we're happy with or satisfied with. It's our intention to collect every dollar of tolls and to go after the toll violators with every tool that's available to us. But I did want to size the problem for you today. Before you is the 5-year revenue posture for the MDTA from fiscal 2008 to fiscal 12. And as you can see, in that 5-year time period, we collected some $1.5 billion, with a B, billion dollars in tolls. And of that amount, approximately $19.3 million was video tolling. To break down the $19.3 million, you can see that immediately $12.6 million of the $19.3 million was paid. This leaves us with $6.7 million, which was the number that was discussed last board meeting, compared to the $1.5 billion in tolls that we did collect. And I'd like to quickly run down for you what we are doing with respect to that $6.7 million. First of all, we have sent $1.2 million to the Central Collection Unit. That represented about 3,000 accounts. And what we have done is taken a kind of a hierarchical approach to this. We're starting with the biggest accounts and working our way to the smallest. We have about $1 million that is going to CCU next week. That actually represents about 100,000 accounts. So that's a much larger group and, as you can see, a small dollar amount per account. We've kept out about $250,000 for which I am personally in direct discussion with some leasing and commercial companies, and I'm pleased to say that just last week, in fact, a check came in yesterday that from one of the leasing companies that actually eliminated 4 of the top 10 outstanding accounts that we have. So I think those discussions have proved to be very successful. Incidentally, that discussion alone involved 776 separate accounts that we had to reconcile. The last two lines are other unpaid that we are working our way through and non-Maryland unpaid. And a little bit later, I'll be telling you how some of the new legislation that we're going to be working on will address those accounts. Okay. So let me tell you just quickly why we need new legislation. Under the existing statute for which we operate, a person becomes a violator as soon as they pass through a toll booth without an easy pass or without paying cash. And as I indicated to you earlier, video tolling is, in fact, now an acceptable method for us to collect tolls, which means that under the existing law, every person who video tolled would have to be a violator and would have to immediately get a citation. On the ICC alone, that would be 1 million violators, when, in fact, we know that most of those people actually end up paying their toll. We tried last year to get some legislation through that would address this issue. Quite frankly, we came into the legislative session a little bit late. It was a very complicated piece of legislation, and we did not get it through. We are ready to do that again. As a matter of fact, last year, kind of to take a dual track, we also tried to make this legislation be part of the BRRFA bill. We were told at the end of that process that that did not really qualify as a BRRFA type of activity. But we're ready to do it again. I will tell you that even before this became an issue, Delegate Malone and I, and Delegate Malone is the chairman of the House Environmental Matters Motor Vehicle and Transportation Subcommittee. We have been talking about this legislation. He is prepared to champion it, and he's actually said that he would be very willing to treat this as emergency legislation if we needed to. Coming up, we have two hearings associated with the legislation. We're going to Budget and Taxation Committee on October 17th. We're going to Finance Transportation Subcommittee on the 30th. This legislation will address the video tolling issue, as I indicated. It does provide for a citation system. If you don't pay your toll within 30 days of getting a bill, you will receive a $50 citation. And it will work much like the what you'll actually get is something that looks very similar to a speed camera violation. It'll be a picture of your license plate and the fact that you entered through the toll facility without paying. We've already talked to the court system about this. We know once the legislation is approved, we're going to need to go back and finalize how the legislation actually got adopted, but they're on board with it. Probably one of the most important things is the new legislation will allow us to begin to flag NVA registrations and suspend NVA registrations, which is a very powerful tool for this. And as I indicated, there has been some discussion already relative to the possibility of making this emergency legislation. Next slide. I've structured this as if it were not treated as emergency legislation and used a July 1, 2013 date as the kind of a dividing point between what we're doing now and what we would expect to do when the new legislation is approved. So today, as I indicated, we have sent many accounts to CCU. In fact, the accounts that are there now are eligible for income tax intercept, which means any person who's a Maryland resident who's going to get a refund on their income tax, that refund will be able to be grabbed if you owe tolls. And I want to thank Secretary Foster, who has worked with me very well on coordinating activities with Central Collection, and also Maryland Motor Vehicle Administrator John Quo, who's been particularly helpful in that regard. As I indicated, we've also had discussions with executive at the executive level with leasing companies. We're also planning on trying to change an aspect of the Public Information Act legislation. In that legislation, there's a specific prohibition against MDTA revealing certain information about electronic tolling. We would like to change that legislation that would allow us to publish what we call the Hall of Shame. Many states, in fact, publish the names of people who aren't paying their tolls, but right now we're prohibited from doing that. And we have been in discussion with other toll agencies about methods that they have of collecting tolls. On a go-forward basis, after the legislation is approved, and we are very, very confident that we will get this legislation, we plan to re-notice all outstanding debt and make those re-noticed accounts be subject to the citation system that the new legislation will have. It will require the ability for a person who is given a citation to be able to go to court and contest it. However, the defenses that a person can raise are very limited. It will again allow us to have motor vehicle suspensions. In fact, under the new legislation, one citation will allow your registration to be flagged. Three citations will allow us to actually suspend your registration. It also sets the stage for reciprocity, or we believe we'll be able to enter into those agreements with adjoining states so that we can go after those persons in other states who owe us money, and conversely, we'll be able to attach Maryland toll payers who have not paid in their states. And finally, we still will have the ability to go to central collections even after the citation process and after the registration suspension. And the MDTA police force will actually use license plate readers to go after those accounts that have suspended registrations, and immediately will be able to take the tags from those accounts and, in fact, impound the vehicle. So the new legislation is something that I think is going to give us back a lot of the teeth that we need to address this issue. The last thing I wanted to share with you is merely where we stand in comparison to other transportation authorities that are adjacent to us. And you can see by the percentage of unpaid transactions that we are currently sort of somewhere in the mix on this. I want to end by repeating something I said earlier, which is even though these are small percentages, no amount of tolls unpaid is acceptable to us, and we plan to use every tool we can to collect all the tolls that are due to this agency. That concludes my presentation.
Questions? Mr. Controller?
Yes, thank you for that, Mr. Bartlett. And, you know, my agency, we have the ability that the legislature gave us to withhold a business and professional license if someone has tax obligations, and that clearly is a stimulating provision. You might ask the legislature to include that in their thinking about this. But I guess my question is, would any of this have happened if the newspaper article hadn't been written?
Well, as I said, Mr. Controller, even prior to this becoming a story, Delegate Malone and I and Motor Vehicle Administrator John Quo and I had talked extensively about getting this new legislation put in place. We were very disappointed that we were unable to do that in the last session. And really, with the opening of the ICC, second phase of which occurred in November of last year, video tolling is becoming much more prominent. And had we got that legislation in January, we would have been in a lot better position.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the rental car companies. That really caught my eye in that article because one of them, I think, we'd sent 7,000 letters to, which seemed like an enormous waste of postage, at least.
I agree with you. It's a very cumbersome process. And when we say rental car companies, we are really talking often about multiple accounts.
7,000 cars owned by the company.
One of the questions that I posed to, in my personal discussions with the executives at these companies was, well, what about EasyPass? Why don't you get EasyPass for these cars? And the answer was, these cars could be in Maryland today and Florida or California tomorrow. So it just, you know, it would be difficult for them to go there. That would clearly be an advantage to us. One of the other trends that's occurring with the leasing companies is many of them now are going to third-party brokers to handle this information, both tolls, speed light, red light cameras, speeding type cameras, so that rather than dealing with hundreds of entities for one leasing company, we would then have the ability to deal with one third-party provider.
But these rental companies, what generally happens with a parking ticket or a speeding ticket, don't they?
Well, again, my understanding of parking tickets and speeding tickets is they have the statutory authority to flag and or suspend registrations. And our current statute is written in such a way that the definition of violator doesn't fit our current operating environment and just doesn't give us the ability to have that very powerful tool.
And these rental companies just say to you when you call, gee, we just blow off $250,000 in tolls that are owed you, even though we have these credit card records of these individuals, and we can easily put it on there and send you the money. What's the matter with doing the right thing?
Well, I don't think, Mr. Controller, it's a question of doing the right thing. I think it's for the rental car companies, it's an equally complex process, and I will tell you that very often we've settled with rental car companies, and then the process starts all over again. And they often have to track down multiple people who have rented cars from them and match up the information that we give them with the information that they have. And so, I mean, for example, the one that settled with me last week, we had been really in discussions with them for several months, and they have actually worked very cooperatively with us. It's just a question of them being able to reconcile and agree the information that we send them and then them matching that up against their records.
Well, that I appreciate the complexity, but it's their customers that are breaking the law and causing a situation that's embarrassing for the state because we're raising tolls on people that are obviously paying their the tolls as they should, and then we wake up and read about this situation. So if you could maybe quietly send our office the information about these rental companies that are cooperating or not cooperating, because April 30th in my office is known as Restaurant and Tavern Day.
Yes, sir.
Because that's the day when these businesses have either paid what's owed us in taxes or we pull their licenses. And, I just find it unbelievable that a major rental car company would say to you, it's tough for us to add this amount to these folks' credit cards. They broke the law. And, yeah, there's a technical thing that prevents us from getting it from them. But, boy, I wish I can't imagine these companies, not being more responsive. So you said one is settled. What about the other four or five?
I'm in direct discussions with two additional ones, and I believe I'm very close on the two additional. And the one that did settle, in fact, eliminated four of our top 10 accounts that owed us money.
And they're settling for the full amount?
Yes, sir.
Well, I have great respect for your leadership and glad that you're jumping on this, but it is a real PR problem because of what is going on with ordinary folks, as you can imagine. And it certainly has got my interest from a corporate responsibility standpoint. And I just don't understand the complexity of, from a car company's perspective, of reimbursing the state and then they can go after their customer. But why don't you just keep me informed, if you would, on
yes,
how
sir.
They
well,
respond
I,
to you.
I appreciate your suggestion about perhaps some other penalties in the new legislation. We'll certainly look at that. And I will also add that in my discussions with the rental car companies, when I did use the interest of this board as a convincing element for why they should be paying a little more closer attention to this.
Tell them the tax collector's interested, too, sometimes. Thank you for that presentation, Governor.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Okay, what do we got now?
There's a second presentation. Yes, Secretary of General Services was going to brief the board on fuel management in the state of Maryland.
Yes, Governor.
I just noticed that we have Jack Russell present the commissioners for a DNR agenda item number 3. I hate to make you sit, Mr. President, so I'm wondering if we might go out of order and take the DNR agenda item 3.
Sure.
Okay.
Do you want to take
come on up, Mr. President?
Governor, item number 3 is the request to approve $5.6 million in World Legacy funding for FY13.
Okay.
And with that, we thank you. And I, Jack Russell from St. Mary's County, I bring you Board of Public Works members, cabinet members, able staffers, greetings from St. Mary's County in Southern Maryland. And I'll refer back to the opening here today about managers making all the right moves. I might say that you all have made all the right moves in trying to help St. Mary's County and the encroachment around our premier test flight facility in St. Mary's County, protecting it from encroachment, whether it be air, noise, and the like. So we are here today to speak on behalf of St. Mary's County in behalf of Rural Legacy Money to protect air encroachment and the like, noise around Pax River. We also represent some of our sister counties on the Eastern Shore. After all, we're in a J-Luce process now that has been initiated through the Tri-County Council, and that's a joint land use study to try to protect Pax River from encroachment of all areas. And we certainly thank you all for your efforts in the past, especially and notably purchasing the several Jesuit properties, one of which at St. Inigo's was specific in the entitlement of encroachment mitigation around Pax River. And we have another one to preserve some of the historic beauty in Newtown Neck. So we're here today to ask you please to look favorably on this. And while I've got the pulpit here, I would like to also say, Governor, that we have another very important project in St. Mary City. It's an ADA project at Chancellor's Point. We would certainly hope that you all would look favorably on this project also.
Is that part of the DNR agenda?
Yes.
You're here on that one as well, Mr. President?
Look, we're here from the motherland, from the heartland, St. Mary's County. Now, look, we've had the first capital down there. It didn't stay there very long. Came up here to Annapolis. Now, we've accepted this, but, hey, while you're here, we just as well push for all of our folks down here and our sister counties on the Eastern Shore also. So thank you for entertaining us today.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Governor, on behalf of Secretary Griffin, Hall, and Hanson, we appreciate the funding for the Rural Legacy Program. And today we have sponsors from all the areas that were chosen in this. We'd like to have them stand up. And
correct.
On behalf of DNR, Secretary Griffin, we'd like to thank them for all their efforts that they put at the grassroots levels for us.
Everybody,
so if they could stand up.
Rural Legacy at Open Space. Great.
And they'd like a photo with you.
Anyone want to be heard? No? Just vote for it, huh?
Governor, is it possible?
Thank you all.
Could we get a photo with you and the show
sure.
members?
I guess this gets curiouser and curiouser. We haven't voted on it yet. Why don't we vote on it first?
Okay.
Then you can decide who you'd like in the photo. Let's, any other questions on, let's do
the whole agenda.
Yeah, the whole agenda.
Any okay, we have four questions? Items today for your approval.
Okay. And the one that the President Russell was just talking about was one of several items on 3A, the Rural Legacy Program grants, right? Okay.
And then we had community parks and playground, City of Cumberland, City of Frostburg on that. Where else? Anne Arundel County. And I see you have an open space on the Castleman Basin Coal Company in Garrett County. What's it, you want to tell me anything about that?
No.
See the map?
Do you see the map in the back there?
Is this a reclaimed coal mine or something? No.
This is acquisition for 256 acres in Garrett County. It is the first property that's actually going to be the beginning of a new WMA for DNR.
What's the new WMA?
It is called the Cunningham Swamp Wildlife Management Area.
And we like calling it the new WMA?
It's new. It's the first part of the wildlife management area.
Wildlife for what? I see.
Protection of this area is... It's, well, we call it a swamp because we love to draw attention to ourselves. The swamp is, it's important to protect that because there's a number of endangered species there. It's important for us to have fee simple ownership of that. So not only do we own it, but we can effectively manage the resources on the property.
Right. Chesapeake Bay might say, your swamp, my lungs. Right? Okay.
But you like that.
Yeah. Governor, if I could just ask a question. So the reason this is important is because there's some risk of development?
No, sir.
Then why are we buying it? Other than...
Well, I think the folks at DNR feel that it's important to protect our natural resources. And in this particular...
It's not a feeling. I don't mean to interrupt you, but we used to buy things on feelings. This had a score of 122 under the program open space targeting system. Do you have that, the list in here, any of why that hit those bells and why it was objectively scored that way in terms of its value as habitat, wildlife, and part of the living system that is the Chesapeake Bay region?
Yes, it was in the, thank you, Governor. I'm not sure what else I can say that was so well done. It did score 122. It is in a targeted ecological area through the green print process. And Comptroller, as you know, all of our projects at this point are the best of the best. It scored a 122, and our threshold is about 80. It is protecting endangered species on this property. And although it's the first in this particular area, it has been on the party list for DNR for a number of years, and we're actually very proud of it.
No, that's a good answer, but I have a continue to ask, what are we protecting the endangered species from?
Well, it's when we purchase the properties, we purchase them, I think most folks sometimes view it as under the threat of development. However, an economy that's sort of lagging in development may not be occurring in that area. If we purchase the property, it allows us, if we purchase it in fee, it allows us to do specialized things on the property that allow them to adjust to changes in the climate, changes in the natural resource of that area.
It allows you to improve its value as habitat, right?
And
this
maintain.
Parcel happens to lie midway between Route 40 and Deep Creek Lake, correct?
Check my map.
And I can
it's,
see it on the
it's
map.
South of Route 40, right?
Mm-hmm. And Deep Creek Lake. So when you answered that it's not in danger of being developed, you meant not imminently in danger of being developed, correct?
Yes, sir.
Witness with you. I'm sorry.
No, there's also mineral rights issues. I mean, according to what you're saying, it's also protecting it from potential serious disturbance because of use of mineral rights, which are,
yeah.
As I understand it.
It's pretty hot and heavy under that.
In this particular page, as you know, the department's position on severed mineral rights
is that we do everything that we can, if the rights have been severed, to get those, either to have them released and put them in our ownership. In this particular case, the department didn't feel like it was a risk because although the mineral rights are severed, they're substantially owned by the federal government, and they work very closely with us to make sure it's managed in a way to protect the surface of property.
Yeah, no, I'm going to vote for these.
Thank
obviously
you.
They have all sorts of data, et cetera. But do you specifically have in your scoring system a category for vulnerability to development?
I don't believe it's called that. I think that our I think it's in your agenda package here. We have a landscape score, an ecological characteristic score, and then we make special adjustments for recreation, habitat, things of that nature. Having a background in real estate, I think that when we look at the targeted ecological areas, they're not necessarily chosen because we think they're going to be, we're not buying them because we feel like there's houses being put in that particular area. Our focus is on the ecological portion of it. That is a factor. And sometimes the threat of development would move it up in our priority order.
As I noticed, item 8, we're paying $650,000 for Dorchester County, Nanticoke Rural Legacy Area. I can pretty much guarantee you that that swampland down there is never, ever going to be vulnerable to development. It just isn't going to happen. So, again, what's the threat to the ecology?
I think there's a lot more things than development that can affect the natural resource of an area. I think you're talking about item 3, number 8 in Dorchester County. There will be a number. When we ranked and scored these projects, we did it by rural legacy area, and we listed the top 3 projects as well as we considered what projects were ready to go in those particular areas in Dorchester County. It could be a combination of conservation easement and fee simple acquisition. When we do conservation easements, it costs us a lot less, and we protect more for that. In this particular case, it includes one of the most pristine and significant watershed basins in the Mid-Atlantic, and that the water is, we're trying to protect the water and the water quality in areas around the water there.
I'm going to put my dark glasses on, not because I want to, because I want to be able to look straight at you. And I had LASIK surgery yesterday, so I can't pick my eyes up to look at you. I'm not saying anything about the item. I'm going to vote for it, but apologies for this is not a prank. I'm just protecting my eyes. Thank you.
Okay, and it's right there in Vienna, the historic town of Vienna. Well, I mean, that's where that one that we were just talking about on on the Marshy Hope.
Let's see, the Marshy Hope.
Which is right along Route 50. And the Marshy Hope is, I mean, it's beautiful. I wouldn't say that that very productive farmland, though, is a swamp. I feel like I have Roy Orbison singing for the line.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the... you know, it all comes down to whether or not you think we have a responsibility to preserve in, you know, the balance that we currently hold on to with the other living systems of this area or not. If you think we can live without living streams and without other living species and without clean water and clean air, then I suppose you would look upon these as frivolous pursuits. But to all of these folks who have given their valuable time to preserve for future generations the remaining habitat and capacity of the bay's green liver, green lungs, green kidneys to function and support our lives as well as other lives. These are important dollars that really belong to our kids and theirs. But I do appreciate the fact that
never before, but now we actually do an objective ranking on each one of these so that it's not just a matter of, hey, we feel this would be nice to have. And I also appreciate, put the map back up there, would you, K-Large? Zero in on it, if you would. Now the next one. I mean, can you zero in on that other one that has the green and the dark green? This is from your green print. Maryland is the only state that I'm aware of that has done an ecological ranking, habitat ranking, you know, sort of an ecological value of every parcel of land within our borders. The purpose for that was to show all of us, the 5.8 million and growing stakeholders in this corporation called the State of Maryland, where our remaining habitat is that needs to be preserved. Anything that is green is what we need to preserve. The areas that are white are already gone. They've been developed and they're not going to get undeveloped. The areas in dark green we've preserved either through federal programs or state programs, and they're pretty safe due to your good work and the conservation easements and the like. This one, as you can see, fills in and turns from a light green to now a dark green, that red parcel, which is right smack dab, not only in the middle of a very large contiguous stretch of habitat, but it also happens to be, go out a little more, right between, almost equidistant from Route 40 right up above, and Deep Creek Lake, which is already suffering so many of the effects of their water quality from the runoff, from the homes, from all of these things that are being built there. And hopefully we'll find better ways to build homes that are net zero energy homes and that also absorb all of their stormwater runoff on that parcel itself. That's our, you know, only hope for our great grandkids, is that we figure out better ways to advance and accelerate green design as well as green preservation. And so that's who we are and what we do in this state among states. Any other questions on the DNR agenda? All right. Controller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor? Signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And now it is picture time with all three members of the Board of Public Works. Come on down. We rarely ever get people asking for pictures after we approve items. All right, this is where I stand. Thanks for your good work.
Thank you, Governor.
Makes you feel good, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Hey, how are you, John? Good. Are you going to see Vicki while you're in the
building?
She's right downstairs. Come on, squeeze in, everybody.
Okay.
It'll feel unnatural. It'll look good.
We'll take a few pictures. We're all set. Right this way. Congratulations. Smile, please. Okay, looks great. Just a few more. Very good. Big smile. Great. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was fun.
Hi there.
tell her?
And by the way, it's just walking.
Can we get started?
Amazing.
We're going
to do
water
roll.
You didn't drive home.
No.
We can go ahead with the presentation on the state suite of alternative fuel vehicles and locations by Secretary of Budget Management and Secretary of General Services.
Governor, if I might, Al Collins, Department of General Services. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, at the previous meeting, the board expressed an interest in knowing more about the state fleet and the fuels that we use. So we're bringing to you this afternoon more in-depth information as a joint presentation from the Department of Budget and Management and from the Department of General Services. Secretary Foster will speak about the role of DBM in this process. My deputy, DeAndre Nansen, will represent the piece relative from DGS.
So, good morning. We prepared a short PowerPoint presentation to address the questions and issues that were raised by the board. The first slide just sets forth that we'll provide an overview of the inventory and the purchasing history. DGS is going to provide an overview of the different types of fuels that exist, where they're located, and then some next steps. The first slide that basically shows that Merlin's fleet consists of almost 8,800 vehicles. Of those 8,800 vehicles, 24%, or almost one-fourth of our fleet consists of alternative fuel vehicles and hybrid vehicles. The next slide identifies the different types of alternative fuel vehicles that are included in our fleet. DeAndre is going to go into much more detail about these, but briefly, the fleet consists of ES-85s, of flex fuel vehicles. These are vehicles which run on fuels that are made from plant-based products. We have an electric vehicle, which runs on a rechargeable battery pack. We have a hybrid vehicle, which is hybrid vehicles which are powered from advanced batteries and also efficient gas. And we've got compressed natural gas vehicles which run on compressed natural gas or gasoline. Now, the bar chart in this next slide just shows trends in state vehicle purchases going back from fiscal year 2007 through fiscal year 2012. And what this chart illustrates is that since fiscal year 2007, the total number of state vehicles that we have purchased have declined overall. But the good news is, while we were purchasing vehicles at a lesser rate, the number of alternative fuel vehicles and hybrids that were purchased increased during that period. The bar graph on that next chart shows alternative vehicle purchases as a percentage of new vehicle purchases. And what that slide shows is that our purchases of alternative fuel vehicles and hybrids has grown from being 11% of our purchases in 2004 to 79% of all new purchases in fiscal year 2011.
That's a good graph.
Yeah, so it really shows that we've made significant progress.
Is that a trend out of the flex fuel and into the hybrids?
Yes, and the next chart, our next slide will give you a breakdown.
Yeah.
What that table shows is it summarizes vehicle purchases over the past 5 fiscal years. It shows that during that period, the bottom line is that 51% of the 2,700 new vehicles that we purchased were alternative fuels and hybrids. I'm going to turn it over to DeAndre.
These slides will just give you a little bit more background on the types of vehicles that we have in our fleet as well as the alternative fueling sites. Here you can see the alternative vehicles that we have in our fleet. Currently we have four types of alternative vehicles in our fleet, which include E85s, electrical vehicles, hybrid vehicles, and CNG vehicles. It's important to note that most of our buses and heavy equipment vehicles in the state fleet are hybrids and use diesel fuel and CNG. Next slide. Some ethanol facts for you today. E85 is a form of automobile fuel composed of 85% ethanol and 15% conventional gasoline.
Ethanol is considered an alcohol-based fuel, and ethanol is a sustainable energy resource as well as a renewable fuel. Our ethanol sites across the state, we currently have 10 ethanol sites across the state. Back in 06, we had one. As of 08, we've added 9 additional ethanol sites.
I understand we started out with a flex fuel and with ethanol. I also understood, at least in the beginning, and this goes some time back, that the flex fuel cars actually used mostly gasoline. They didn't take advantage of the flexibility. But when they did, aren't we also trying to trend out of ethanol into other alternatives?
I would say that
we're trying to ethanol.
We're trying to do a mixture of our fleet now. We are trying to look at...
We have a policy regarding corn-based ethanol.
No, we don't have a policy on ethanol.
It's obviously, Madam Treasurer, you're very close to this topic, but there is no state policy in that direction. We're looking at the literature on and looking at the science of it all.
Well, I mean, you understand my concern. Oh,
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are all sorts of other complications involved in corn-based ethanol other than... Yeah. Mileage.
Definitely.
Do you keep track of the proportion of flex fuel vehicles that actually are using something other than gasoline?
We do have stats that can show you which vehicles are using ethanol, and we could drill that down. It would be a consumption across the state of the vehicles.
I mean, I don't have to see all that, but I do know that when people started out with cars, including some quite large cars that said flex fuel on them, they used nothing but gasoline. It was advertised. I'm saying this in general. I'm not saying this about the state of Maryland fleet particularly. But I think we do have to be candid about what we're actually doing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think when we get to the next step portion, you see that we've been paying attention to that. And the further that bar is the direction we need to pursue. Absolutely.
So that's an indication of the ethanol sites that we have. We also, the next slide gives you an indication. You can flip to the next one. The next slide gives you an indication of the ethanol consumptions versus the gasoline consumptions. Go to the next one, Kevin. Here you can see our ethanol consumption has increased steadily, but not by much over the years. And our gasoline consumption has also increased over the years, considering that our vehicle count has gone down. Next slide. We also have electrical vehicles in our fleet, and electrical vehicle facts indicate that they are the mobility of the future, propelled by an electrical motor and powered by rechargeable battery packs, and they are considered to be environmentally friendly. In the state, we have a total of 114 electrical charging sites. 32 of those electrical vehicle charging sites are at our state facilities. Most of them are located at the MDOT facilities. We were able to get these 114 electrical charging sites through federal grants through NDE. You can go to the next one, Kevin. And we also have CNG vehicles in our fleet. CNG vehicles are considered natural gas vehicles, and they use a clean alternative to other fossil fuels, and they run on either gasoline or CNG, as the treasurer mentioned. And most of our CNG fleet is considered buses across the state. We have 2 CNG locations here in the state, one at State Center and one at BWI. Some next steps. For DGS and DBM, we are going to recommend require use of the E85 for our flex fuel vehicles with those that have a more routine access to ethanol pumps. Monitor the compliance through our state stats review of the agencies and introduce a new policy. As it was mentioned earlier, we don't have a policy. Introduce a new policy as it relates to ethanol. And continue to promote the purchase of all types of flex fuel vehicles and alternative fuel vehicles. That's the end of the presentation.
Question.
Any questions?
Is there something that shows what percentage of our...
I'm just trying to... What percentage of the fleet is... Can you go back to that earlier slide, Kevin? So what percentage of our fleet as gas fuel versus alternative fuel. Is that the next slide? No. Next one?
It's near the front.
Those are new purchases.
I'll do that.
One more, more to the front?
Yes.
Okay. So the E85 vehicles, as I understand it, are vehicles that run on a combination of gasoline and one, what
ethanol.
Is it, 15th
yes.
or 12% ethanol?
Yes, sir.
Something like that?
85.
Okay. And just that little bit of ethanol brings down the carbon emissions much more dramatically than that 12 or 15%, correct?
That's correct. Arguably, there's...
Pardon?
Is there still some discussion among all them?
About how much,
yeah,
really?
Right.
Uh-huh. And the total number of hybrids is 104. And the natural gas is 65. All total, that means 24%. I know that there is a consortium of... And how does the total number of vehicles today compare to the total number 6 or 7 years ago?
It's
the total number of vehicles today for fiscal year 12, and it's about 8,800 compared to in 2008, it was 9,500.
9,500 to 8,800.
So over the last 7 years, as a result of the fiscal crisis, we bought less vehicles, but we have purchased a large number of alternative fuel and hybrid vehicles.
Okay. I know that there is a consortium on, and now this doesn't count. Does this count? Transportation Authority?
The buses, it does. Yes.
It counts the buses. So it counts the Maryland Transportation Authority?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What does it not count? Are there significant fleets that it does not count?
There's a larger bus fleet. This includes, I believe, just the vehicles. These numbers came from from DBM. These include the vehicle purchases. The buses, the bus fleet, I think, is a much larger bus fleet in terms of CNG buses.
Mm-hmm. And they're not on here?
No.
Okay. There is a consortium of about 15 states that are all joining forces to buy vehicles together.
CNG vehicles, correct.
Yeah. When can we join that?
We're having discussions right now with Abby about signing on to that MOU to join that consortium.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to do a much quicker conversion than what we're doing now. I appreciate, though, that to the extent that we are buying vehicles, they're alternative fuel vehicles. To the treasurer's point, are they actually being used as alternative fuel vehicles, or are we just gassing them up?
Right.
Not as much as we'd like, honestly. You know, that's a campaign. We need them out. And as we got, based upon your directions, we got more fuel and sites out there now that can handle the flex fuel. Now we expect to uptick there.
Because I still see the gasoline consumptions. Although it's below where it was.
Right.
Not much below. But it is below where it was. Mr. Comptroller?
Yes, I agree with you, Governor, on CNG. I think that's a great direction to go on. But I also really associate myself with the remarks of the treasurer on ethanol. I think I'm not now speaking for myself. I think it's a consumer boondoggle. Well-intentioned, save the environment, clean up the air, but it's just proven to be a counterproductive measure, and I know it benefits obviously a couple of farmers out in Iowa, but how about the rest of us who have to pay high food prices because of this adventure? And so to the extent if natural gas is an alternative, please, and the governor supports that, obviously I'm very strongly in favor of that. I just think ethanol is a complete subsidy for a couple of folks that are out in the Midwest. And, how about our consumers? It's not all due to biofuel. I'll give that. But, boy, it's a major chunk of increased expense. And so I'd hate to see us moving further in that direction rather than the natural gas. Which
there are other forms of ethanol.
Yes. Yes, we need to pursue the exact type of ethanol that we're using.
Could I ask another question? This you hadn't anticipated, and I apologize, but you're buying, you continue to buy, we continue to buy gasoline-powered cars, obviously. But there are a number of almost all gas-powered vehicles actually are getting significantly better mileage, my impression is, than they used to. So if we're simply concerned about fuel efficiency and reduction of spewing out things, are we looking at increasing the proportion of energy-efficient gasoline-powered vehicles as well?
I think our focus right for the time being had been on ethanol fuel vehicles, but as we move forward, we are going to be expanding and looking at other opportunities. Certainly, even with the gasoline consumption, we realize that it has been about the same level that it was several years ago. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do going forward is making sure that more of the state vehicles are using the ethanol fuel, putting into place a monitoring system, and then moving out and looking at other opportunities.
Well, what I'm saying, for instance, is with a lot of American cars, mm-hmm. they are significantly more, the gas-powered, non-alternative, are significantly more fuel efficient than they were a few years ago. And at least according to the president's and the EPA's plans, they will become more fuel efficient. So I would hope that we would go along both courses, move over to alternatives, but also when we're buying gasoline-powered vehicles to look at the fuel efficiency. The bottom line is we want to reduce the use of gas. You can do it both ways at the same time.
We agree, and as we put together next year's list for your approval, we will see to what extent we can add other efficiencies that will allow us to use less gas.
Which also saves money on.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. I think we asked some time ago for this briefing and then kept bouncing it because of other things coming up, and I really appreciate being brought up to date on this. I think it's really important. I think Maryland's making tracks. People ought to know about it, even in these tough times. I mean, it's very interesting actually seeing what's happened the past three or four years. But that the proportion is changing. I urge us, almost every car maker is coming out with hybrid mm-hmm. versions now.
We will pursue that.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
The treasurer always teaches me new things. Apparently, there are good-based ethanol out there. I'm concerned about this corn-based ethanol, which, according to the United Nations, the U.S. produces enough corn-based ethanol that if instead it were used to feed people, it could feed that corn 412 million people for an entire year. That's what we're doing out there in the Midwest. So I would love to see a policy, if it made sense and people were in favor of it, where we just plain flat out stop buying corn-based ethanol. It's a boondoggle.
We'll certainly look at that as a policy suggestion.
And I don't know what other kinds of ethanol are there.
Well, there's beets and other kinds of fuel.
Actually, Brazil, which was a half-breaker, uses sugar beets,
right.
And it's much more efficient.
And it's a matter of what's available.
Okay. I mean, Brazil's entirely, it doesn't use gasoline.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, we can look at the mix, what's available, and see what the price range is and come back.
412.
Bush wanted switchgrass.
Yes.
Well, whatever. Well, switchgrass.
Switchgrass.
Yeah. And that was here when John Smith was touring up and down the bay. But 412 million people could be fed for a year.
Controller also.
Yes.
It's not just the fuel-based ethanol. The corn, the proportion of corn that goes into corn syrup and other products, actually not just straight into people eating.
Yeah, I'm just talking well, that's good.
Yeah.
But I'm talking just BTUs.
It's unbelievably. That's a different. Yeah.
But I'm talking BTUs. Obviously, there are other uses. But, you know, if you're on the edge of whether you want to go with beet-based ethanol or something else, be my guess. The problem is, from a consumer standpoint, everything goes up in price when we do this. And, you know, natural gas sounds like a great compromise, frankly. CNG. Thank you.
I'm convinced that there's a lot of stuff we're not capturing on here, like all of the locomotives we
purchased.
They're not here.
No. Heavy equipment would not be here.
Yeah, the equipment's not on here. I'm not sure your buses, your MT. I mean, the Fed bus fleet is a huge, expansive, and a lot of that's on CNG. I'd like to see a more consolidated thing. Did y'all work with StateStat on this? Or?
We have worked with StateStat on this. They did review it.
Because they track that greenhouse gas reduction thing, and they do it across by measuring the fleet conversions across everything that's the state, not just
vehicles.
The DGS.
Right.
Yeah. So I think there's a more... Can you do me a favor and take a run at a more consolidated report? It might even be online.
Definitely.
Already.
But I do think that this graph is very, that's one of the stuff there. Yeah. It's pretty dramatic.
Sure. We'll be glad to go.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay. What were we on there? Thank Department you. Of General Services agenda. Anything else on Department of General Services? Was that just the presentation?
That's just the presentation. I only have 12 items. I only have 12 items. I'd be glad to see
you. All right, as long as you're up, Al.
Yes, sir. Governor, DGS has 12 items on our agenda today, and we'd be glad to answer any questions on any of them.
All right.
And it does include item 4GM, which Commissioner Russell will reference in his request.
Item 4GM. Anybody want to talk about item 4GM? St. Mary's folks? Give us the elevator version.
Okay. Well, Chancellor's Point is a 66-acre property.
Before, but could you introduce yourself again for this?
Regina Fodden, Executive Director of Historic St. Mary's City.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry. And thank you for allowing us to give you a few minutes overview. Chancellor's Point project is a 66-acre site that's part of Historic St. Mary's City, so it's a state-owned property. It has been not used as much as it had been in the past because there had been some destruction of the property. So we're bringing back a nature center that's on that property, and what we want to do is allow people to use that as much as possible. We partner with the college. We're trying to do environmental programs there, but we'd also like to figure out a way for it to be more fully used because it is a pristine site. It is beautiful. It says you look right over to Virginia. It was owned by Charles Calvert, and that's where it gets its name. So we have a grant through Access Maryland to create a boardwalk down to the river. This is one of the things that the National Park Service and other areas are interested in, getting people access to the water so you could get a boardwalk down there. We also have some ADA spaces that are going to be there for parking so people can get to the site and then up to the Nature Center where we have some restrooms and we'll have some classroom facilities and things like that. We're also working with the college, and this is part of the proposal, is to allow the college to have procurement authority for us, and we are very happy to work with the college. We've worked with them very well in the past, and we also hope to get the road finished. It's about a half-mile road so that people, again, can get access to this beautiful site.
Good morning. My name is Chip Jackson from St. Mary's College, and simply, when the Department of General Services asked the college a little while ago if we'd be willing to help out as a way of doing the project more effectively and efficiently since we're local, of course, we said we'd be happy to step up. And so we're here to support both DGS and Historic St. Mary's City. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions, Department of General Services? None from the Comptroller, none from the Treasurer. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you. We now go back to our regularly scheduled programming. Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, members of the board. There are 16 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning, together with 3 reports of emergency procurement. We are withdrawing item 12, which will return at the next meeting.
Okay. Any questions? Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to, we did the DNR real property, right?
Right. Budget.
How about the Department of Budget and Management?
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Ms. Comptroller, good morning again. There are 5 items on the DBM agenda for approval. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yeah.
Comptroller moves approval.
Can I just point out, Governor, that as Suzanne just pointed out, that Reggie is item number 4, Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and number 5 is weatherization. And just two examples of the sort of thing we were talking about at the beginning of the right before us this very moment of the actions being taken for which the state is getting significant credit. Well deserved.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it isn't often that there's this coincidence of actually being able to see before us exactly some very prime examples of good energy-saving steps that also help people in their homes. Number 5. Thank you. Thank you for bringing
it. So, Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to University System of Maryland.
Morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Jim Sterling for the University System. We have 5 items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to address any questions you have.
Questions, University System of Maryland? Hearing none, Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you.
We move now to the Department of Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Elliot Schlanger, Department of Information Technology. This morning we have 3 items on our agenda. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. We'll move on now to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Acting Secretary Darrell Mobley. MDOT is presenting 7 items. Item 5M has been revised, and item 8GM has been withdrawn. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Good. Hearing none, Comptroller moves approval. Treasurer seconds. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And that concludes our Board of Public Works. Thanks very much.
I'm sorry.
I was